Jhené Angola Jr., the podcast.
I didn't realize until the day that we're only about 8 weeks out from Christmas, which seems insane to say. I'll tell you one gift I don't need coming up on Christmas, and I don't know why the NBA is so hell-bent on apparently getting it to me. It's Jhené Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, Mike Golic Jr., and Jhené Egwumike. But I gotta say, today's the first time in a while, Jhené. This is like our first full week back after being preempted into the sun by Major League Baseball's postseason throughout a lot of the last couple of weeks. It has felt like Friday, like a bearded Troy Polamalu showed up on our doorstep around here. Ariel Helwani just came and threw a blowtorch to this entire place. You threw me under the bus on air. It all feels like we're back at home.
What? I didn't throw you under the bus. We're a unit.
We're a unit until all of a sudden I am talking to our MMA expert Ariel Helwani and I mispronounce Khabib Nurmagomedov, and then you throw me under the bus after when you flaunt your pronunciation in my face and blame him being mad on me.
But you can say Egwumike, so all is forgiven.
You're trying to pull something over on me right now, and I'm hip to it at this point. We've got that going on. Coming up later, there is an enlightened discussion to be had about the ideal dating app height. Because we were talking about this before the show. I have this working theory that no guy over 6'2 has ever lied about his height. Because there's no reason to, but Jhené, you pointed this out, and this is a very uniquely basketball problem. That guys over 6'5 run into a different problem. What were you saying about this? Because I, for anyone that's unaware, I top out at 6'4, and so I'm not privy to these like super tall problems. But you said dudes over 6'5 are lying sometimes.
Yeah, when you're over 6'5, sometimes they might think that it might be too tall, so they drop their height. So that's why you see it in basketball a lot. A lot of 7-footers don't want to be labeled a big because they can shoot the ball. So now they're 6'10, 6'9 when they're really 7 feet tall. Wow. I can put you on game. This is my specialty. I can tell you based on a dating app how tall a man is.
Really? Oh my God. All right, you know what? Save this. The dead giveaway for dating app height scouting right here. Find you the other show. If you want to hear this kind of advice, check us out on Jhené Angola Jr. Be a part of Jhené Angola Jr. Nation on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed. ESPN Nation is presented by Dr. Pepper. It's official. College football's back, and so is your favorite Dr. Pepper-loving college football town, Fansville. Head to a store near you to treat your inner college football fan to an ice-cold 20-ounce Dr. Pepper today. At Mike Golic Jr., at Jhené, our producer Shannon has been pounding the table all show saying he is 5'10 and a half. And I am here to tell you that, again, no one ever 6'2 ever claims the half.
He would have put 6 foot on his dating app if you were dating. He's locked up.
Oh,
but he would have put 6 foot. Guarantee that.
See, this is this
Shannon,
is
would you not? Right, not if you would have done it. He's not.
She looked in the Zoom and said, nah, that is a dead giveaway. That's what I mean. And you know what? I understand why it happened. So I want to unpack that in a little bit here. But Jhené, we mentioned basketball, and the NBA is in an interesting situation right now. The NBA is discussing, and there's going to be a meeting today, I believe, starting the season sooner than expected, potentially around Christmas Day. Now, there had been talk way back when of the NBA in this next season wanting to play. Adam Silver's quote was, the goal for us next season is to play a standard season with 82 games and playoffs and in some home arenas in front of fans. And now the conversation is about speeding up that timeline and maybe not waiting for fans to be back in every arena in this instance. So, Jhené, where are you at on this? Because I look at this and say this smells like greed that's not normally associated with the NBA, but looks very similar to what we've seen from the NFL and other leagues as we've returned.
Yeah, I think the NBA is trying to figure through its costs. So I can understand why they as a business would want to start sooner rather than later, especially with Christmas Day being a hallmark game day. Like traditionally, my family, every holiday, we're always watching these big NBA games. Obviously, football's there, but like that's the basketball community's really launch point. And so I think they want to maintain that touch point. But my goodness, if I just got home from the bubble, which by the way, I said it a couple days ago, it was like 10 days now since the Lakers won a championship. 10 days. You look at a scenario where, all right, you're home, finally just acclimating to being out of the bubble. The NBA draft is on November 18th in about a month. Imagine being a young rookie drafted and then you're playing a month later. That's a WNBA timeline, which most people don't even know about. Like, I graduated a quarter early from Stanford so that I could actually go from being drafted late in April and then play in late May And that's the turnaround that the NBA, you know, that's why we got to hug our women out there, because our women been doing this.
Honestly.
But that is, it's hard. It's extremely hard. So you're looking at a 10-week runway. But if you're a rookie, you're going into the league with a month preparation with your team. That is tough. And I think, you know, as a member of a players association, this is what we would be fighting against. Like, yo, can we meet in the middle? And I know the back end of that is Martin Luther King Day, around 3 weeks or so into January, which feels a little better if I'm an athlete that played a long run in the bubble. But I can understand why the business is pushing, because they need these games, not knowing what the outlook is going to be with another abbreviated season, another season with, where you may not get ticket revenue. So I get why they're trying, but I can just feel tired already for the athletes that are already tired right now.
I guess that's the thing, Chinay Ngolick Jr. here on ESPN Radio, because it at some point, and this is the difference, we've talked about this so much, we're going to talk about the Big Ten coming back in about 10 minutes and all the complications that start with that, not only for them, but for the entire landscape of college football. But in this, you've got players associations that you've got to deal with, and you've got players, like, I can't imagine, I know you opted out of the bubble, but your sister NECA was in the bubble with the Sparks the entire time. I know that's their season wrapped up a little bit before the NBA season, but what's the transition been like back for her? I got to imagine part of it is just this unbelievable weight that you've shed now, coming out of a completely unique situation.
So I think the bigger issue here is, like, the transition is, like, everyone's, you heard Danny Green, get me out of here.
Yeah.
Like, get out of the bubble. And when you're trying to pull off a quick turnaround, it feels like the only way to ensure you can do it again is by going back in one, or at least a couple of them, or some kind of, you know, contained environment, because you can do that, and that ensures your product will be able to play a even 70 or so game season. So I think the bigger issue here is just, will you have athletes that will sign up to do that again? And that's going to be the biggest buy-in. And I think the best argument that the league will have is, if you want this check, we need you to do this.
Well, and that's a great point, because part of the debate going forward, as they wait to see the basketball-related income numbers come back, and this is how much money are players going to have to put in that escrow out of their paychecks going into this season, coming out of each one, while they're uncertain about what kind of revenue is coming in and all this. But, Janae, overall, I look at this and say, you're right. So much of this stress comes from the fact that we just got done, and you're asking these guys to not only start again soon, but to even have those conversations, to have to make these kind of decisions fresh off of that. This feels like what we talked about in the NFL. Why not give yourself the obvious week 18 wiggle room if you're in the NFL? If you've built in this buffer, why not give yourself a longer runway? If you're the NBA and you're thinking, like you just said, about wading into the same problems that these outdoor leagues, Major League Baseball and the NFL, have been dealing with, because that's what's coming. If you want to play in your home arenas, I get you've got fewer people. But once you introduce travel and being able to live your normal life outside of the bubble into the equation, I'm not willing to just say that, well, you know, everyone in the NBA is just better behaved than everyone in Major League Baseball and the NFL, and there ain't going to be any issues. That's not how it works in this situation. That's not how it will work.
I can tell you that's not a fact. Look, we try to act like we got it together. Nah, same problems, different sports.
It's the truth in this situation. And so it's going to be very interesting to watch. And for the NBA, a big date to keep in mind is October 30th. The NBA and the Players Association agreed to that deadline to complete their ongoing conversations about modifications to the upcoming CBA for next season.
I will just say this, and maybe this is me spilling too much tea, but you know, it's a safe space. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why the bubble was in Orlando and not in Vegas.
Mm. I can think of a few. I can think of a few reasons why that was probably not the case. And I can think of a very few legitimate reasons why things like that, and why bubbling in the future is going to be less likely. I mean, again, you guys were finishing seasons in the NBA, in the WNBA. Major League Baseball had to start a season and deal with all these, and then bubbled at the end of it. The NFL and college football are going through whole seasons. So I get all the challenges that come with it, but man, it just feels like starting on Christmas, just because that's your day, like, there isn't any your in 2020. We're dealing with our collective problems, and people have to start treating it like that.
Hit yourself.
Mm. I don't even know where that came from. How did that happen?
Was that energy from Ariel?
You know, it was. It was Ariel Helwani continuing to put us in the pressure cooker inside of this. So we'll get back to more on the NBA. But coming up next, speaking of pressure, trying to do a season with no wiggle room like we just talked about is exactly what we're getting ready to venture into with the Big Ten. How are they going to pull that off? That's next. It's Chinay Ngolick Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Mike Golic Jr., Chinne Igwumike, reminding you, tune in for college football action tomorrow. LSU hosting South Carolina, presented by Dr. Pepper. Coverage begins at 6:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. And, Chinne, I'm, you know this, I cover college football. I was, you know, I was on off the back half of the show yesterday, calling the game for Arkansas State and Appalachian State last night. I love college football, but you've seen firsthand, it's been a very conflicting season, knowing everything that's been going on with the virus. As you've watched from the outside, because again, I know how I feel, and we're getting ready. The Big Ten is starting up this weekend officially. For a lot of people, this means college football is really back in all of the ways. Based on what you've seen, as someone who sees this from the 30,000 view we sit with on this national show every day, how concerned have you been with the way it's gone on right now? We've had a lot of postponements. We've certainly had a lot of positive cases of the ones we've heard about, but it's still chugging along technically.
I'm not concerned about the football other than I guess the Big 12 has been really interesting just because of the way they started. And we know that there are a lot of competitive groups that are dealing with playing in a situation in a season with the virus. But to me, what I've seen is the top teams will raise themselves and still show themselves. We saw that with Bama versus Georgia. And we're seeing that even with Clemson and that, 73-7 win that they got. So, like, in my big scheme of things, there are a lot of teams trying to find their footing. Bama and Clemson are not one of those, and I'm excited to see what the Big Ten has to offer, especially with Ohio State. And of course, come on, now I'm excited the Pac-12 is back soon too, okay?
And that's the thing. The excitement is natural, but I think so are some of the reservations, and especially with some of the specifics that we're going to get into with the Big Ten. A lot of people have reason to wonder if anyone from the Big Ten, even Ohio State, can realistically be involved in the title. Cliff?
So much to say.
Are you good? Like, do you need a minute to breathe? Do you need some water?
So little time.
I'm trying to balance a lot right now.
One and done.
Chinne, there's an interesting wrinkle to everything that's getting ready to happen with the Big Ten, because remember, they're getting set to try and play an 8-game conference schedule in 8 weeks. No wiggle room in this process. We just talked about it with the NBA. And so now we've also received word that if any game can't be played because of positivity rates within a team, it'll be deemed no contest in all of this. There is at least going into it now a 6-game minimum in order to be eligible to play in the Big Ten's conference championship. As you look at this right now, Chinne, we've watched the NFL get positive tests during the course of this, had to move around their schedule. Do we really think that just because the Big Ten is testing daily, that anyone, do you think anyone in the Big Ten realistically makes it through all 8 games of this season?
I think that having that minimum absolutely helps so that you don't think that someone is immediately out. Like, as long as you get to 6 games, I think that's what they're shooting for. And that's the hard thing, because you want to play all 8 so that you can beef up your resume and look as good as possible going into the playoff. But I'm actually really excited. You know why? Because Justin Fields is back. And this is a guy that I know a lot of people were saying, you know, super great elite quarterback. He threw 40 touchdowns and only had 1 interception last season. He lost to Trevor Lawrence in the college football playoff, which meant he's probably motivated. Like, and so I'm excited to see, hopefully they can hang on. And now I guess big picture here, it's like, how good will they be prepared? Oh gosh, my English. How well will they be prepared in this scenario? I am excited to see if he can sort of, you know, look to that history and create a new future through this opportunity, because he has been one of the loudest voices along with Trevor in making sure he has an opportunity to play this season.
Stanford education on full display right there.
I caught myself. I hate it when that happens all the time.
I can say I'm in no room to talk. I am my father's son.
I keep saying shrunken or whatever it is.
I think shrunken is technically the right word in all of this. The right way to do this is going to remain to be seen. The Big Ten Conference is going to determine whether to cancel games based on testing positivity rates within a team. And if it can't be played, we mentioned no contest. In order to compete, you've got to have at least 6 games, with the tiebreaker rules that were also released. They're going to try and do 8-8 in all of this. And Chinne, you mentioned Justin Fields, Ohio State. They're the team everyone thought about when all of this came out, period. The one that has a chance to ultimately crash the college football party that we think is right now basically exclusive to Alabama and Clemson. And I agree in this instance. I understand Michigan is hyped up and thinks that Joe Milton is finally the guy in Ann Arbor for Jim Harbaugh, the first quarterback he's recruited out of high school that's going to start for him day one in all of this. But, Chiné, the thing that's going to be most interesting to me in all this, as we mentioned, trying to do 8 and 8 weeks, I don't know if it's doable based on what we've seen in the rest of college football, even through no fault of a team like Ohio State. Teams with resources win. We see that in normal college football. We see it in pandemic college football. And that comes with being able to go and operate in a way that keeps you on the field. But they play other teams that aren't necessarily held to those same standards because this differs so much across the board. So that's what I worry about. A college football playoff doesn't have a 6-game minimum, doesn't have any set minimums at this point as in the way that they're judging. All they've got to go off is an eye test that exists in a vacuum. And if the rest of the Big Ten can't hold up their end of the bargain, Ohio State may pay the price for it.
But let's play glass half full and say that they're able to get 8 games. And with all eyes on Ohio State, I want you to put on your college football analyst cap. What can we expect from this team?
I mean, I think the same thing that we got last year in a lot of instances here. Now, they graduated some of their better linemen up front on a line that blocked for a guy in J.K. Dobbins, who was one of the best backs in college football, could have had claim to the best back in college football last year. But they bring back, like, this season's not overly complicated to me. If you've got a quarterback and a head coach that come back that were used to each other and playing at a high level, especially in the Big Ten, Chiné, because we have to remember, as we've talked about, seasons have started at different times. I called a game for a Houston team that made its first play after 5 attempts at trying to play a game that were thwarted by the virus going into this. This was an entire conference that got told, we're not playing, operated like they weren't playing, saw this groundswell of support and changes in testing, and then was like, all right, we'll get back to training camp and start to do this. It's going to be ugly at first, unless you're the Warrior Elite. And we've seen Clemson, Alabama, a lot of these other high-end great teams up top come out and miss a beat far less than the teams below them. That's going to be Ohio State. But for Michigan, who's bringing in a new quarterback, an entirely new offensive line, new bodies on defense. For other teams that are having to worry about those same things, Wisconsin to a certain extent, it's all going to be some bit of a maturation process in a time that's not really conducive to that.
You know, I have a really soft spot for Coach Harbaugh in Michigan because he was my head coach at Stanford. And I'm really excited because I'm trying to think, like, when was the last time he had a quarterback since he left Stanford, not counting his stint at the Niners? Are you buying the hype in Ann Arbor? Are you excited? Because this is a redshirt sophomore, I believe, that has only thrown 11 career passes.
It's very interesting to me, Chiné, because the talk you're kind of hearing around there is so positive. And we know Dylan McCaffrey, Christian's brother, was a high-profile recruit for them that has since departed. And so that should be an indication maybe of what has been seen behind the scenes there. But again, I worry about the structure around him. Michigan's a blue-chip program, and you expect them, especially at this point in Harbaugh's era, to have enough waiting in the wings to replace it. But again, I look up front. 4 all-Big Ten offensive linemen that became NFL draft picks out of that group there. Guys that are already getting early action on Sunday. Going to make it very, very interesting and very, very difficult. And even if they win 7 of the games, if one of them's not Ohio State, we're going to have problems. We know how that works around there. So,
and that's the matchup you're going to be watching tomorrow, right?
Well, the matchup I'm going to be watching this weekend is going to be interesting. Nebraska gets what looks like, for a lot of people, the beginning of their punishment tour against Ohio State. Michigan and Minnesota is going to be very, very interesting this weekend. I think the biggest matchup of the Big Ten opening slate, and one I'm going to be very curious about, see if PJ Fleck and company can row the boat all through the hopes and dreams of the folks in Ann Arbor, the little Notre Dame fan part of me.
Okay, just warm us all up until the Pac-12 comes out. I'm excited.
Exactly.
We've been doing this whole time.
The precursor to the Pac-12 in all of this. We'll get the opinion of the hot seat of Jim Harbaugh and what should teams really be considering when they're looking at bringing in a player like Antonio Brown? We'll talk to Marcus Spears about how he would have led a locker room through what some team may potentially go through here. That's next. It's Chiné and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Chiné and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Will we see Antonio Brown back on an NFL field? Week 8, that suspension eligible to end. And suitors potentially lining up. We know the Seahawks are one potential team. It's Chinay and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Mike Golic Jr. and Chinay Agumake. And we're delighted now to be joined on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line by our guy, ESPN NFL analyst, former Dallas Cowboy and Baltimore Raven Marcus Spears, with us on that Shell Pennzoil Performance Line with the new Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. And Marcus, we heard it in the open there. We've heard it the last couple of days. Antonio Brown suspension up, and the Seahawks, Russell Wilson, were asked about it, the prospect of bringing him in. If you're on a team at this point, is this guy worth the trouble that he brings, knowing the ability he's got?
My people. I just want to holler at y'all first before we get into it. Listen, man, we all know it's a well-documented history for Antonio Brown, but obviously you know this, Mike, and you know this, Janae, is that these conversations have already been had when it comes to the players, right? Russ vouching for Antonio Brown to be on the team, talking about how he could help. Any smart player, especially when you have a guy that's the face of the franchise like Russ, Geno Smith, backing him up, who has a good relationship with AB, the conversations and the forwardness of where he can go with the team is not going to start the day he shows up to the facility. So somehow, some way, through conversation, probably staying in contact, they feel comfortable enough based off the relationship prior to this being a possibility of things working out. Now, let's get to the real part. We don't know what the hell Antonio Brown going to do. Don't nobody know if he going to act right. Don't nobody know if he going to come in and be a model teammate and a model player and come out and do his job without having any conflict. What's the questions that everybody's going to have in our position is, what's going to be the response if he's not being featured in the offense the first time? He think he's open eight times and he only gets the ball four of them. All of those things come into play. But the great receivers, obviously, when it comes to on the field, they all have that kind of motto. But you would hope that AB understands that DK Metcalf is the future. And he's being brought in to not only revive his career, but help this team win a Super Bowl. So all of those things. But it's a lot of underlying issues, Mike and Tonight. But y'all know me, man. Don't nobody know what the hell AB going to do. You're taking the chance.
Marcus Spears always breaking it down, our own ESPN NFL analyst, co-host of NFL Live here on Chinay and Golic Jr. Now, Marcus, I have a really quick question that I have to ask. The height you were listed at when you played, was that accurate, or did you add a couple inches?
What height they had me listed at? I'm 6'4".
Okay, that's consistent. He's telling the truth. That goes to your point, Junior.
Janae, you done seen me before. You know I'm 6'4".
So, Marcus, I had this theory I was trotting out with Janae today that no guy over 6'2 has ever lied about his height.
Come on, man. Yeah, man. I ain't gonna say I'm 6'6 or 6'7". I'm tall.
And the truth stands. I'm glad we have a corroboration right here. Now, last night's game, how impressed were you with Carson Wentz and his play, especially late in the comeback win over the Giants?
I love seeing Carson have success, unbeknownst to Philadelphia Eagles fans. They think because I'm a big Dak Prescott fan that I want to see Carson fail. I don't. The thing about Carson Wentz is this, and I made a comparison that was super controversial, but I compared him to James Winston. I was not questioning if Carson Wentz is a better football player than James Winston. I believe, obviously, he is. I was not questioning the number of interceptions that James Winston has thrown in comparison to James Winston. I was talking about those head-scratching plays that he makes, seemingly most games that we've seen him play, where you just say, why in the hell would you do that, Carson? Why would you do that? Last night, you roll out. You got room. You just throw the ball up in the air in the end zone and get it picked. And I'm thinking to myself, like, this the same guy that's probably going to manufacture, when they got the ball back, when Evan Ingram, let's not even get to that, him dropping the ball. When he got the ball back, Carson got the ball back, everybody had full confidence that he would take Philly down the field and win the game as long as he didn't make the Carson Wentz mistake in that moment. And he's shown a propensity to be successful in crunch time in games. That throw to Boston Scott was as good as a throw you'll see all season long. The throws, the improvising that he was able to do and get the ball to the middle of the field early in the game, throwing a deep shot down the sideline and making a great play on that. Carson Wentz has to – the throw across his body that could have been picked, that's another one. So if you listening to me, Sinead, and you listening to me, MG Jr., didn't I just take y'all on a damn roller coaster ride? That's Clark Owen.
That is him in a nutshell.
But his great moments, his great throws, the way he plays the game, more so than not, is elite. That's why he got $120 million. But he's going to have to be that 90% and maybe have the boneheaded play or the bad decision 10% of the time if he wants to win on a decimated team with offensive weapons that he doesn't have at his disposal. He'll get some guys back healthy, but we saw Deshaun go out last night, which had early three catches in that game, and they wanted to feature him. Carson is fine as long as Carson on Carson.
Former Dallas Cowboys first-round pick Marcus Spears with us here on Chanae and Golic Jr. Carson is going to Carson sometimes, and that's something that the Eagles have had to try to worry through. On the other side, Marcus, before we let you go, man, got to ask. On the other side, we saw what happened with Daniel Jones. Is that funnier than the butt fumble play at this point, man? Like, did he unseat New York sports quarterback's worst moment in the butt fumble with tripping after an 80-yard run last night?
Yeah, man. It did, man. Listen, first of all, bro, Daniel Jones soul left his body and then went and tackled him and was like, no, we're not letting you shine like this because you don't get excited enough about when good stuff happens. So that's all that was. That was Daniel Jones's calm demeanor, same face you expression. I used to play against a guy named Eli, and we've heard the comparison. That was Daniel Jones' soul removing itself from his body and then going and tackle him because he knew the celebration was not going to be right if he scored on that touchdown. So he was like, I'm going to let somebody else score, DJ. I'm going to let you get this 80-yard scamper. I'm going to show people how fast you are. And then I'm gonna leave your body, tackle you, and I'm gonna let somebody else score that's gonna do justice to all of these people that's watching this game be played when they celebrate in the end zone. That's all that was. I've been trying to explain to people. They wanna relate it to Halloween, they wanna relate it to a turf monster. No, that was Daniel Jones doing Daniel Jones. That was Daniel Jones soul tackling the Daniel Jones, the human man, because he knew the celebration wasn't gonna be right after a long touchdown run.
That's why you got to watch NFL Live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern. No one else is going to tell you about soul tackles except for Marcus Spears. Marcus, we love you, brother. We'll talk to you soon. All right, man?
Thanks, Marcus.
All right, man. Love y'all, too. Enjoy the weekend.
Absolutely. Hopefully more soul tackles coming up this weekend in the NFL. Marcus is just an absolute gem. But Chanae, I want to go back to what he brought up. The conversations that have already been had about Antonio Brown in that Seahawks locker room. I saw Russell Wilson's comments, and they shine a light on exactly what this situation has always been about and will always be about until something changes. That's next after this word from DraftKings. See, there's no better place to get in on all the football action than with DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. And to add to this week's excitement, DraftKings has a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes up for grabs. Just download the DraftKings app now and use our code CJR. For a limited time, new users are going to get a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes. That's code CJR. Going to get you that free shot at millions of dollars in prizes with your first deposit. Only at DraftKings. Make it rain. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Back after this. It's Chanae and Golic Jr.
Chanae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Chanae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the show, Pennzoil Performance Line. Coming up in about 10 minutes, end zone or friend zone. It is the time-honored debate on this show. We are going to get back to letting you know who to watch out for going in to this weekend in the NFL. With an added bonus, fellas, if you ever wondered what she's looking for on the other side of that dating app and how she is scouting you as she goes through deciding which way to swipe, Chanae is going to put you on game in about 10 minutes. We have got the advanced look at the height charts for dating apps in the modern world. I am thrilled for this one because, quite frankly, I am in the cushiest possible place in all
you
this. 6'4 is a perfectly acceptable
perfect.
Dating height.
Yep.
All that good stuff.
That's the holy grail of heights.
That really is. Like, I had no idea until you started telling me about how tall dudes will lie going the other way because they're worried about being too, like, freaky tall and all this.
We'll give you the threshold.
All right, there we go. The perfect threshold, the ratio, the golden ratio for height, coming up in about 10 minutes here on Janae and Golic Jr. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive celebrating 8 years of donating cars to veterans in need. Learn more at keystoprogress.com. Speaking of six-foot dudes, Russell Wilson had something to say this past week, or this past day, really, talking about Antonio Brown. We've heard so many of the reports, his suspension eligible to end after week 8 in the NFL, and the prospect of a team signing him. And as soon as Adam Schefter breaks this news, Chinee, the Seahawks are the first team that he mentions as a potential suitor. And when Russell Wilson was asked about this, this was what stuck out to me. The Seahawks star quarterback talking about Antonio Brown seeming to be remorseful.
Like I said, nobody's perfect. You know, from the conversations I've had with him, he's really been remorseful and just, he's been humbled, you know, along the way. You know, I really, you know, and like I said, I pray that, you know, he can continue to grow just like anybody, you know, and, you know, all the stuff I'm not into that, you know what I mean, in terms of knowing, you know, I wasn't there or anything, that process, you know, that part of it, but knowing, you know, what I know of him and the times I've been around him, and that, you know, I try not to judge people, you know, and I think that along the way, though, you know, I think it's important that no matter what, no matter if he plays football ever again or not, I think it's important that, you know, that he's surrounded around the right people. I think he's surrounded around, whether if he's here or anywhere else in the world, I think it's important that anybody, you know, is surrounded around the right people along the way, and hopefully he can grow in that process.
That stuff, by the way, he had been the subject of an NFL investigation after an accusation of sexual misconduct at his home by an artist working there in 2017, pleaded no contest in June to a felony burglary with battery charge and two lesser misdemeanor charges related to a January incident with a moving truck company in Hollywood, Florida. The NFL also continues to investigate a lawsuit filed by Brown's former athletic trainer alleging that she was sexually assaulted by Antonio Brown. A source told ESPN the Seahawks are still gathering information about that situation and the potential for further discipline. So, Chinee, with all that in mind, I hear this from Russ, and it just sounds like the same old sports thing. Like, yeah, I know all that other stuff is going on, but our culture can be the mask and the deodorant that makes people not think about that stuff while he does great football for us.
I think Russell Wilson is correct in saying that, and you and I would agree, we're not here to judge people. Everyone has their own journey. But at the same time, you can't be willfully ignorant to what people have done. You have to assess, especially when it's not just once, it's repeated, you know, repeated errors or repeated mistakes or repeated transgressions. And so, yes, you're playing a sport where hopefully that person can be inserted, and that's all you have to worry about, doing your job, playing football, being able to maximize and capitalize on someone's talents. But the issues are not football. And so everyone goes in hoping that you're the one that can change somebody else. And when I hear this, I sort of think of like relationships. You think of someone else and, oh, you know, this person has had issues. And a lot of times we're inclined to think that we're the ones that can fix them. When in reality, the older you get, the more you realize you're good. The Seahawks, they're good. They're 5-0. They've got Russell Wilson literally playing MVP football. And so now this is going to be a calculated risk, one that you could prevent if there is a problem.
And Chinee, it's so interesting to me because we hear that all the time. And the relationship comp is interesting in normal circumstances because then it's a private matter. It's you and another person. This is pro football. This is a public business. And these are decisions made. And these promises that they make of, we're going to put this person. This isn't a Russell Wilson and a Seahawks conversation either. This is what we hear all the time. And part of me is just glad, like, we cut through the noise so we can see what this is really about, because it's about all the football stuff. Like, all the rest of that, we have a culture here, we can put this person in an environment, yada, yada, and they never show us any of the receipts, and they never show us any of what goes on, and we see the same things happen over and over again. So why are we ever supposed to believe what we just heard from Russ or anybody else when it sounds like that in that situation? Because we're never going to be privy to that, not in the ways that are necessary when it comes to the issues like the ones we laid out with an Antonio Brown in situations like this. That gets to be the frustrating part. Like, just say we believe he can be an asset to our football team. We understand the NFL is going to take care of the rest of that process, and this is what we're about. Because when you try and sell me on the other stuff, it only refocuses me in on what this really tends to be about almost 10 out of 10 times.
Point blank, period. just keep it honest. Keep it 100. Look, we're using him as a football player and hopefully as a man. This is an opportunity for him to grow. But right now, we're looking at how we can bolster our team. But when you sort of say it in different ways, it makes it harder to understand the message.
Because they think that's what you're supposed to say in these instances, and what you're supposed to say and what should actually happen if you're interested in helping someone grow in all the ways you claim to be are two very, very different things. All right, coming up next, we'll switch gears and look at the NFL weekend that's on deck. End Zone or Friend Zone next on Shanae and Golic Jr.